Hello and welcome to everybody listening now and in the future. This is Monday Live. For those of you out there listening who are not part of our pre and perinatal educator program, this is a live Monday lecture series that goes with our program. And every month we have lectures from experts in our field that are connected to different competencies that we like to have our students learn. The sequence goes from understanding the foundations of what we do to the epigenetics and neuroscience parts of understanding the baby's experience, and then breastfeeding and labor and delivery and learning and bonding, as well as some of our psychological theories. We have 11 total modules, and so we have 11 months of lecture. And we also have this Join the Conversation, which I'm really hoping to engage you all with some interesting ideas about what comes out of our paradigm. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Kate White. I'm the founding director of education here at APA. So today we're very, very fortunate, and I'm very pleased to have one of our very own students who's been one of my mentees. Those of you who are listening out there who are not part of our program, you do get a mentor. But she's been working very hard in the PPNE program and as a professional and presenter in her own right. Ann Matthews is a chiropractor, a holistic chiropractor from Belfast, Ireland, and she incorporates prenatal and perinatal psychology into her chiropractic treatments. She has studied baby body language with Matthew Appleton, and she has worked a lot with Carlton Terry, who is another one of our pioneering professionals helping train practitioners. So she has a wonderful presentation today about baby body language. But I just wanted to engage you in a conversation. Like, I'm sure if you're here, you and her are an enthusiast of our paradigm. You believe that babies have experiences and communicate about them. So I'm wondering if any of you had an experience of understanding what babies say, how they say it, and what kinds of things have you seen in the work that you do? Does anyone want to join the conversation before Anne gets started? Oh yeah, Barbara Decker. Yippee. Oh. Go ahead, Barbara. I'm sorry. I think I muted you when you were unmuting.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I took Dennis's program where he teaches us how to hold the babies right after they're born, as early as possible after they're born, and to help them unwind sort of from the birth just by holding them. And he taught us how important it was to look in the baby's eyes and say, I know that you know that I know you know how aware you are. And the stare that comes back from those babies, they understand that you understand what they're trying to say. And I learned a lot from Dennis's program, that one day training that he does before the conferences. And it's very, very, very helpful. So I use that with any of the babies that come to visit me after class, after I teach hypnobirthing. And we have a reunion afterwards. And I teach the parents to do that. Let the baby have the awareness that you're paying attention to what their needs are. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. For those of you who received the email that was sent out by our program administrator, Karen, we did include a little video. It was made by Rebecca Thompson Hitt about the baby's experience and how the baby tells a story. He says, every baby tells a story and we need to listen up. So it's great that you can look in the baby's eyes and really get it, that they get it. And then when they get it, that you get it. They really are appreciative, and they can even begin to tell you their story, which is what some of our advanced practitioners are going to communicate about, and that's what Anne's going to talk about today. Okay, I want to get started with Anne. So Anne, we've practiced sharing screen. She's going to give us a little PowerPoint presentation, and then we're going to come back to you and engage you again hoping you'll join our conversation about baby consciousness, baby awareness. So Anne, why don't you go down to the little green square and share your screen, see if we can get it this time.
Can you see that, Kit?
No. Mm-hmm. And your microphone's gotten a little strange. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So click the green square.
Share that, screen. Done that, Kit. Mm-hmm. That again, Kit.
Okay, yeah. And something about your sound has really gotten strange. Check your connection, like into your computer.
Yeah, everything's stable.
Or move your mouthpiece up, maybe.
Yeah, something's wrong up with your sound. And I want you to go out and come back in. Okay. In the meantime, I'll engage somebody else in conversation about baby awareness. So Rita Clooney, yeah, I was going to call on you. Why don't you tell us a story about your work with babies? Yeah, and why don't you leave the meeting and then come back in?
Okay. Sorry about that.
It's okay. Rita, go ahead.
Oh, yes, one of the classic things is like, babies play their, and they're like, stop. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one thing that's really clear. And I think another one is they start sneezing when they're overstimulated. You know, because sometimes like the parents will come in and they're eager to want to interact. And they just do too much to the baby and the baby will start sneezing, like as a signal that, you know, they're starting to get dysregulated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To me, the cough also. So usually what I'll see is a baby will look away and then they'll sneeze and cough. That's what I'll often see is the most subtlest cues that this is too much. May I just see a show of hands of how many people on our call today are baby body workers? Work with babies, work with moms and babies. Karen, you do? Yay. Yeah, I know Karen Melton too. I see Karen's here. And Nina, yay, Nina's our new incoming director of education, so it's nice to have Nina here today. Sylvia, too, great, Sylvia. Yeah, so good. All right, Anne, here we are, you're back. So,
yeah, I'm back. Share, first of all.
Yeah, share your screen, so go down to the green square and click share.
Yep.
Yay. All right, now find your PowerPoint. And now it's your show, so go ahead and start from the beginning.
Are you seeing that okay?
Yeah, I see it okay. Your sound's still a little affected, so.
That's interesting. How's that now, Kate?
No, it's got a very metallic sound to it. I'm wondering how it is if you just took off your headset and chose the computer microphone.
Yeah. Can you hear me now, Kit?
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, okay. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much, Kit, for inviting me on board and for all your support as my mentor, who's facilitated this big step for me. I would like everyone, first of all, I would like to welcome everyone, and I would just ask you all to, as we say, arrive and just be kind of aware of where you are, your feet on the floor, your seat on the seat, and I'd just like you to be aware of your breathing. When I start to present to either colleagues or families, I like to connect with everyone. And that, I know that's not quite possible in a group like this, but I would like to ask you just a few questions as we go along. And one is, why do you do what you do? And what is the thing that motivates you the most? So I'd just like you to make a mental note And I'd like you to, I'm just going to try and, it's interrupting my screen a bit. One of your challenges in practice, and when you read about the baby body language conversation, what was it that resonated with you? So I'd like you just to reflect on those 4 or 5 points as we move forward. What I describe as a baby body language process, perhaps I'll just like to correct a few misnomers. It's not just about babies. It's about children. It's about adults, because we do reflect our own baby body, pattern at any stage in our life, because we were all born. So yes, we will refer to it as baby body language, and this is where we want to begin, because the earlier we can begin in acknowledging and resolving, for example, baby trauma, early baby trauma, the better the outcomes are for the adult. So at any one stage, I will ask myself when a family come into the room, or I will ask professionals to ask themselves, where am I? So how present are we? What's our breathing pattern like, for example? What's our intention for the session? I then am interested in where the parents are. And by that, I mean just how present they are, what kind of language they use, how they are connected with themselves. Is one parent, for example, more activated than the other? I then want to know where the baby or the child is in the room in terms of how they interact with the parents, how they interact with me, how they interact with the room. And as I achieve all that, I look at how I could facilitate change, if that is indeed what is required. And then how I can feedback that to parents. So yes, it's important to be able to recognize baby body language, but it's how we integrate it into our practice in whatever skill or discipline that we have, I feel is important. One of these things is involved looking at the relational field, because unless we know where the parent, the child is, we can't establish that. So the first thing is to build up trust and rapport with parents. And by building up that relational field, then they too can understand and see the body language that perhaps I'm seeing and I want them to help with. Now, I do have a number of images and videos, and I want to thank again the parents who've allowed me to take them. Now, as with many of you who are body workers, is that it's not always a good idea to have a camera in the room. And I don't have one on a regular basis, but I do have a photographer who come in every so often and take photos or videos. So this was one of these days where this was staged, in that the parents knew the photographer was coming in and I asked their permission. I'd been working with this family for a couple of years, and you can see from the mummy and daddy how connected they are. They are more relaxed, they're smiling, they're looking at how little Erin is unwinding. She has profound neurological issues from a traumatic birth. So I've helped this family along the path of being able to read their child, who is now 13 and still attending me. Their next child is little Andrew here. And I want you to see just a little bit more tentativeness going on. You can see that the mum is just being a little bit wary. Daddy in the background is just keeping an oblique eye on what's going on, and the baby's connecting well. Now, so I teach parents to recognize the baby body language. I also teach them how to handle a baby. Just like I think it was Barbara mentioned about the professional who said how to handle babies, and I would agree with that. But I don't want to be the person who handles the baby and then hands it back to the mummy who hasn't learnt the technique, because I want to empower parents. So I want to help them right from the start. So I need to know where the baby is. So I often talk about a memorable event. I ask parents to remember to throw up an event for me, like a birthday, like a christening, like an anniversary. And the stories that they may have told around that, the photographs that they may have taken on the day, the visitors who came, things went well, they mightn't have gone so well. And then I talk about, well, what about this very first event, for example, around birth? How much did we talk about it? And there are gaps in what we have shared. So this is what I want to help parents with. Now, I've just got a wee issue here because I can't see that little piece that I've put up there. Kate, could you just tell me what it says in that square? I can't.
That's oblique tracking.
I just can't. Oh yeah, the oblique tracking. I just can't get rid of this bit on my screen. Uh-huh. And what's the next bit?
Eye contact.
Eye contact. So they're the things that I just described on that particular family that I've shown you with. Then it's listening to particularly the mum's narrative. I explained to parents that if I meet a child at 16 weeks old, for example, if there was a chapter, if there was a chapter for each month of their little life in a book that I was going to read about them, I would only be starting on chapter 4 or chapter 5. And it's important that I understand and know about the previous 3 chapters in the introduction. So I relate a lot of what I do to very practical everyday things so parents can relate to it. This then helps me to allow parents to understand the difference between what's called memory crying and needs crying. This is something I'll mention, I'll talk about later. And then what I'm also doing is tracking what we call the pre and perinatal signs. What movements or the child is expressing that indicates where I should start the story, whether I could facilitate a mum telling me a little bit more about the birth, or I might facilitate saying, well, tell me a little bit more about your pregnancy. Or I might then, as it develops, ask a question like, was this a surprise baby or a planned baby? And that tells me a little bit about why I would want to go into baby preconception, conception, or the very early stages in the first trimester. And there's indicators that the baby is giving me that allows me to start that. At any one stage, I'm looking at what's called, I'm also tracking what is called loyalty conflict. And that is that you may have a situation where, for example, that a mum really wants to go in, you know, for example, the baby is an unsettled baby, the baby's crying through the night, and the mum just wants that stopped, for example. Whereas the baby is saying, no, 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 no. I want you to talk to mommy about the birth and why I was so shocked and why I'm still in a state of sympathetic awareness. I'm running too rich. That is what we would call a loyalty conflict. So I need then to manage the situation so that I can facilitate mum to understand, yes, the crying will be something will be resolved at a point in the future. But at the moment, I need to go back and hear a little bit more about where and how you both got shocked, because it isn't just a baby that experienced this shocking situation, but it's also a mum. And once the mum tells a story, the baby can release this for all the neuroscience that's around it. The baby can release this and then we can move on to the next stage. So this is called what's called tracking tolerance levels, tracking the tolerance levels of the mum, the baby, maybe grandmother's in the room, or maybe the dad's in the room. These are all terms that I would have learned from Carlton Terry in his baby therapy work. So this moves me on to this next picture or this next image where the baby has gone into what we call memory crying. Now, if it's needs crying, you will often find that a baby will immediately eye contact the mum and the baby will want an immediate reaction from the mum who will lift the baby or whatever. Whereas in memory crying, the baby will often look away, like what this baby's doing now. So I've explained this to the parents, and the mum is tentative. She's being supported. I'm resourcing her. she has her lower hand under his sacrum, her upper hand over. So she's connecting with the baby, and she can also feel the baby shift and unwind. Meanwhile, Daddy, who's holding the older child, you can see, for example, just how he's holding his mouth. I'm just going to briefly comment on what that is. He's more tight-lipped. And this is also referred to as a mums, M-U-M-S. And it's metamorphical, umbilical mouth movements. Now, this dad is also displaying baby body language. So I have a situation where I've got three people showing baby body language, but I'm working on a baby. So I need to track that, and I need to kind of go back. And there's times I need to help parents at a stage in the future to perhaps consider their own personal work around this issue. Now the baby's gone, moved on to the next stage where the memory crying has now eased, and you'll see that far away look that the baby has. You can see he's more relaxed. His breathing rhythm has changed. His arms have become more relaxed too. And he's very, very deep, tentative and relaxed state. Now a parent can see this and they will mirror it back to them. They mightn't be able to understand exactly what it is in the moment, but they can sense that their baby has just made a shift. And this is where then I explain to them about what happened. And it is baby body language, what we recognize in the cry. So I would give all this information back on the, in the feedback. Please forgive me if I'm talking too quickly. When I get passionate about what I do, I tend to talk faster, and the Americans may not be used to the European accent. So Kate, I trust that you will stop me if I'm speeding up too much. So how can I facilitate change given what I've just described? So again, these are Carlton Terry's terms, and it's called permission-based practice. I can't move on to the next stage unless I've got those three in the room, the two parents and the baby on board. And there's indicators that someone is not on board. For example, that father over there, for example, if he then shifted, if I didn't see a shift in his body language or his the mouth movements that he was doing, or his breathing, then I would stop and track in with everybody again before I can move on to the next stage. So I also need permission from babies and children before I move on. It's not just a matter of signing a consent form and saying, yes, you can treat my baby. I need them to give me the indicators. And this is what's called recognizing permission thresholds. At any stage, I'm listening. It's called empathic listening, and it's not just active listening. It's really becoming much more heartfelt, so that the parent can also have a sense of what that is, because I want them then to replicate that for their babies. Another term we use is called tracking the person with the lowest tolerance level. And then when all that is achieved, then we can use our own therapy, whatever that might be. It can be hands-on therapy, it can be hands-off. Although my background is very much in biomechanics, I trained as a physiotherapist, first of all. I've been in practice 33 years as a chiropractor now. So although I'm very hands-on, there are times when I don't have any hands-on contact. I'm actually facilitating this, what I have on the slide, on the screen at the moment. I'm facilitating all those facets, because once I've achieved that, a lot of the work's done already, and then I can help a parent move on to the next stage. Next stage is around inviting parents' stories. I invite them to the stage where they will come in and tell me a story immediately, unprompted. For example, this mum came in with her 4-year-old. She said, I knew we had to come back, although I was seeing this 4-year-old every 12 months previous. She said, I knew I had to come back because my little girl said to me, I need to go back to Anne because I can't find my happy face. Now, that's quite profound that a mum will listen to that and not dismiss that. And also for the child to have been so resourced that she can feel confident enough to say that. And this is really where we bring baby body language into the older child. I had a grandmother bringing in twins because the mum had gone back to work. And she talked about how the children were negotiating, and she was very amused by this. So she tells her story. And then at the end, I then describe how this negotiation would have gone on in the womb, where the children would have taken turns about feeding, because both twins don't feed off the mum at the same time. They will take turns. So this turn taking will actually come out in play and in later life. And once a mum, particularly around twins, understands this, they can negotiate more with the children. They can negotiate more with the babies, with their twins. And they're understanding the child's baby body language at that age. And also a child is understanding it. I'm not going to go through all of these, but the one at the end, for example, I was working on an 8-year old who only came to me when he was 7. So much more challenging, much more difficult. Very resistant patterns set around his baby body language. But I had been working with him and I could see the progress, but the mum couldn't see it. So that's again an indication of the lowest tolerance level. I had to go back and address that because we weren't going to move on if mum couldn't see it. So then the next day she came in and the first thing she said was, "I've just picked him up from school and the teacher said, would the Brian today come back tomorrow?" So that was really reassuring for her because she could see that someone else could see his progress. So then I needed to work on mum as to where her blind spots were around seeing that progress. There's a few I'm going to mention, but there's ones I'm going to come back to, particularly when a father described his 3-year-old as she's just a needy child. And I'll come back to that in a moment. I'll just let you read them as we go along. So the more I can help a child become more aware of themselves and to express that to the mum, then I know that the mum and dad have learnt the baby body language, have reinforced it to the child, and the child now is coming back to them. So where is the child at any one point? I talked about the memorable event. Now, the next 4 slides, I'm going to look at my time here. Half an hour. The next 4 slides are around pre and perinatal education. I wasn't too sure who was going to be on board, whether it was who was be listening, whether it was already APA students or mentors, mentees, or new people. So I'm just going to assume that a lot of people know what pre and perinatal education is, but these are terms that I will use when I make my presentations to parents, because I really want them to have an awareness that the importance of birth, how it affects the body, how it affects the somatics, that a baby is conscious, and how it affects a child's neurodevelopment, how they roll, how they crawl, how they stand, how they walk, what their stamina is like, what they're like at finishing tasks, for example, is related to their pacing at birth. What they're like as independent children who can dress. And then in previous presentations, we've had more talks. We've had talks about the greater effect on the human development. And my work is definitely around supporting mums in their pregnancy, supporting them in the birth plan, choices, preferences that they would like, and supporting new moms who come to me. You can see from that photo, the baby's body language is probably glaring out at all of us. We are seeing a distressed baby. No mum, no parent wants to see that their or wants to hear that their baby has been distressed. And I guess our job, my job, is to acknowledge that, but also to sensitively and empathically explain that that child did go through trauma and how we're going to deal with it. That the baby is conscious and aware. They do have their own experiences. They do have their own feelings. Now, the reason why I need to talk about that is with parents is that I also need to introduce a term called reinforced prenatal experience, that what this child has experienced now, it can be experienced and reinforced at another stage in their life. This is where I'll explain children have a fear of needles, for example. I had a mum in who was actually I'll show it to you later, had a breech presentation, and she was hurt, scared, and really afraid of needles. But she herself was a premature baby and was in the premature baby unit. So this does get passed from generation to generation. And then, of course, the themes of loss, abandonment, violence, and aggression. In Northern Ireland here, we have one of the highest rates of suicide among teenagers, particularly in the northwest of just Northern Ireland itself. And we also have those children whose parents give birth to these children, those parents were in a sociological study which looked at, they were born Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. They were a cohort that had induced deliveries, and now this is their children who now have the greatest rate of suicide rates, especially among young boys. So for me, this is very telling and work that I really want to do here in Northern Ireland. So we know that it impairs quality of it impairs bonding. It interrupts the baby body, the baby mum dyad. I see children playgroup preschool who have neurodevelopmental issues, who have psychological issues, and the shock and trauma have affected them. And really what I want to manage too is the failure of parents to acknowledge that the baby had this birth trauma, and that they themselves had birth trauma, and that it's being reinforced and it's now becoming a transgenerational issue.
Could we just have a breath?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah.
Right there. Just everyone can just slow down and have a breath. Feel their feet. Thank you.
Yep. So I will have this image come up several times, and I will ask you to read and to tap into yourself. Notice what's coming up. I'd like you just to become aware of your feet on the floor and your breath, and exhale. So David Chamberlain would say, the womb is a classroom and every child attends. This is a little image that I actually did take. It's not one of my photographs, but I think this is really good because it tells a lot in this particular image about baby body language. You can see the child is pulling his left ear. I really want you to notice, there's a number of things here. This child is displaying his what we call this lie side. So where he went into the birth canal and got compressed, I'm curious around it. And none of this we can say definitively, but we can suspect and be curious around the compression on the left side of his face. And notice his left eye is slightly narrower, compared to the right. There's compression around his frontals, and at his neck fold just here, he's compressed. So I would suspect, and also he seems to be more favouring that left side too. He's probably about 6 months. He's sitting up on a high chair, but I would suspect he's around the 6 month mark. And I would be curious around this child's delivery. People might say he's got an earache. He possibly has, but he's also got compression of his temporals. So I'd be interested in the mum telling her story around this one. So the body keeps the score, and this is an indicator. So I will have children with chronic ear infections, for example, children who can't bear wearing glasses, children who can't bear having their hair brushed. Kate, could you tell me what's on that slide there? Could you?
Expressed in physical movements and sounding.
Yeah. So I'll explain to a parent that the child is telling you what the problem is. So this child will be sounding a certain way, is a very different cry to the cry of hunger and the cry of needing your nappy changed or a sick cry. This is a different sort of cry. It does affect their neurodevelopment. This child will also have the left side of his face. He will have a different awareness around here than he would to this side. Even where this child is placed in the room, in the cot, will have an effect on him. He will have biomechanical restrictions. He will have compression around his neck and shoulders. These are children that, if it's left unaddressed, they will often have difficulty around crawling, doing hands and neck extension work. They'll have difficulty. Maybe I'll stop there. So this child is expressing some sort of birth trauma. Now, the photo in the middle, an image here, this is a baby who mum brought the child to me when he was 5 years old with this little photograph. And she said, "I finally got here. I know his birth has had an effect on him. He was very hyper. He had sleeping issues. He was a poor eater. He was on fight flight response." Now, I just want you to look at this image. This baby is supposedly lying on his back, but as you can see, he's not. You can see that his left hip is higher than the right, and it's as if he's rotated to his right side, as if he's lying on his right side, but he's actually lying on his back. So he has compression of his left hip. You can see the forceps marks around his face there on the left side of his face, and it's been forced to the right. So this baby would have a torticollis, can't turn to the left, for example, and he's forced in this. So the baby body language will be expressed in uterine expression. It will. The other term is called umbilical effect, when a child will, in this instance too, will kick their legs as if they're trying to get away from it. And what they're trying to do is get rid of the cortisol that was, for example, in the umbilical cord and that connection with their mum. This then leads to faulty birth dynamics, and this will also lead to some sort of impairment of brain development. Or it could be a physical thing, it could be actual degree of brain damage, or it could be an emotional issue or psychological issue. And my job is to help a parent figure that out. So again, I would just invite you to pause and to just allow yourself to integrate what I have spoken about. I come from a physical background and from a biomechanical background, and I particularly find the skeleton a really useful useful starting point for parents and children from the age of 4 or 5 who can see the little skeleton that I have in the room. Now, none of us come British, Irish, American standard made. We all come with variations. But for this purpose, I talk about body symmetry, one half being the same as the other half, sort of. So I explain that if the pelvis is aligned, the spine is aligned, and the shoulders are aligned, we will have equal weight on both sides, and parents and professionals will agree, yeah? And then I show them the skull and how it's made up of so many different bones. And they all work together. So if one bone gets compressed on one side, the other side will try to compensate to make up for it. Yeah. So then I then move on to the next stage, where I will often look at a child's shoes. And in this case, you can see that the right shoe is more worn at the near the toe and the midfoot, where the little aeroplane is worn on one side compared to the other. Now, this is such a useful tool for parents because they get what I'm talking about, that their baby's body language is expressed in their biomechanical alignment, and the child is favoring one side more than the other. If the child is doing that, the child will have difficulty sitting still in playgroup, what we call playgroup or nursery school, or in their first year at school. And they will then have what's teachers will often describe it as they're having some sort of hyperactivity. But it's simply because the child isn't balanced in the first place. Yeah. So then I'm going to move on. So once I have sort of had a parent grasp that about baby body language, I would then use these other tools. These are images from another chiropractor called Carol Phillips, who first introduced me here. I thank her for these. She first introduced me to fascial release work and craniosacral work in 2000. And she made these images. And this is really helpful for a mother to realize that the more the baby is aligned inside the pelvis, more upright, 85 on the image to the left, 85% of babies present themselves like the image on the left, 85%, around that. Now, when you can see the image on the right, you can see the two red marks, one around the left hip and one around the right set, the right ribs. This is a common and a very common presentation that a pregnant mum will have. I've got pain underneath my right ribs and I've got sciatic on my left side. Now, often the parents, well, certainly here in Ireland, the parent is told that it's just the way the baby's lying. That's not correct. The baby is lying in the cavity in which it's been given, and the cavity isn't balanced. So I then will guide a parent, a mother, into and often they will come with an issue with their first baby, and I will invite them for their second baby or for their second pregnancy or before their second pregnancy is to look at their own biomechanics. Have a body worker of whatever sorts, chiropractor, physiotherapist, an osteopath, whichever, to help with their body alignment, their own physical alignment, because that's contributing to the child's imbalance. Now, ideally, we want this sort of setup where we've got 85% of babies are in this position. You can see the arrows up and down. This is really important for a child's neurodevelopmental progress. So there are something like 12 primitive reflexes that allows the baby to exit the birth canal. And that the baby wants to do it in a sequence at their own pacing and at their own volition. So if a pregnancy is, so if a delivery is induced, is augmented, you're interfering with that baby's, potentially interfering with that baby's own sequence of neurodevelopment. This happens time and time again, and we need to address it when the baby is born, is older, by reading their baby body language. Now, these are examples of it. You can see yourself, the one on the left-hand side, number one, you can see that the shoulder is misaligned. This child's got a severe torticollis. The one on the right is the child older. The torticollis is still present. You can see the crease lines on the adductor crease lines in the inside of the leg. These are all signs of baby body language. There are more subtle ones, of course, but I need to help a parent. I need to help a mom and dad to see these because then they feel more more resourced that they can do something about it. Like this child, you can see looks unwell, he's not happy, and he's trained his parents to hold him upright, because if he's upright, then that's holding his spine in this vertical plane, where his head can sit on his shoulders, because this child's head, as you can see from the right hand side, is favoring the right. He's got compression of his occiput, compression of the right temporal, and he's got ear flaring. This then will affect the neurodevelopment later on. So here's a child where the left arm is able to come in underneath him. He is having difficulty holding his head up. He has to side flex to the left, and he's difficulty getting his right arm in underneath. So this would be a typical shoulder dystocia baby. This would be a torticollis type baby. And you see his eyes, how flat they are. So this is a child is even expressing shock on his optic nerve. These are all indicators of baby body language. Now, this is much more traumatic. This was a photo that has been shared with me from one of my pediatric groups that I belong to, and as a group of chiropractors, and they were asking, how would you deal with a child like this who's stuck in this position? Now, from a pre and perinatal point of view, from baby body language point of view, we really need to be working with a mother in this situation too. Correcting this child as it is just now and not addressing the other issue, you're not working on the baby body, the baby mum dyad. It is so important to work with a mum and ask her to tell her story, how she and this baby got into this situation. Because if we don't, we have left a mum with unaddressed birth trauma. We may have corrected the biomechanics of a child, but we're not working on the emotional or the psychological issue and the family dynamics. And I haven't even mentioned the father who was probably present at this birth, who is really shocked. Now, with that child in that position, they often call it the sunny side up, which again is, it's a lovely little term, isn't it? Sunny side up. And it's not, again, it's this myth about birth trauma. It's not a true reflection of what that child is. And it's demeaning to, on some level, that child is not giving more meaning to the experience that child has. Now, this is a 19-year-old girl who first came to me when she was 7 with severe constipation, a firstborn, very traumatic birth, very similar to the baby I've just shown you there. But I want you to see the discoloration just at her hairline, at her neck. This is, effectively a birthmark, as we'd call it, but it's a conjoint point. So this is where her little neck would have impacted along the rami of the during delivery, and she got shocked and stuck there, and it was in high sympathetic mode. This little girl suffered severe constipation and anxiety, which is very much part and parcel of this type of situation. Now, this is a breech, a baby who was born, the baby was actually born by cesarean section, but it was a breech presentation with throughout. And I did mention this one earlier to babies who've had, this child's mummy was a premature baby and was in the NICU unit. And this mother was absolutely terrified about needles and terrified of the fact that she might have a C-section, given how her baby was breech presentation, her first baby. Now, she came to me at 38 weeks, really very late into the pregnancy. So all I could do was do some damage management control. And that was around helping her around her own unresolved trauma around needles. So she went on to have the C-section, managed it very, very well. And then you can see the asymmetries here. And this is the next stage then, was to working with the baby. The asymmetries on the child's legs, the right to the left, you can see there's more creases on the right leg, for example, the back of the right leg. You can see the buttock on the left upper image there, where the actual crease line is a C-shaped and goes off towards the left shoulder. So this is indicative of a baby being compressed in utero constraint. Now, often breech babies come out like a bag of weasels. They can be very cross children. They can be very cross babies. They can be very volatile. Their fight flight has been affected. This baby too, for example, would, because they didn't go through extension and the go out through the birth canal and didn't activate their Peyer's reflex, they would be prone to being bedwetters later on. And certainly sitting at school is a real difficulty for them. Standing in line is a real difficulty for them. So then I teach parents on reading the baby body language. I want you to see this child. The mum came with the older child, so she was aware of what I was helping her with. And this child's right sacroiliac joint, where the dimple is on the right-hand side, is restricted, and the baby couldn't flex his right hip. So I'm demonstrating to the mum where I would like her to massage across the quads, the back, and across the glutes. So once I've done this, the child then has crawled. Now, the mother is taking this photo because she couldn't believe that he would stay still because he was just moving so much. He couldn't stay still at one stage. So I said, well, do you like to take a photo for daddy just to show him, because he's not in the room, show him, you know, how well he's doing. Yeah. So she took the photo and sat back just in front where his head is. And after I just finished, he promptly crawled over to mum, connected with her, as if to say, you and I have done well. He reinforced the baby body dyad, then promptly looked at her in the eyes and came back to me, sat up on my lap, crawled back up, sat up on my lap, and his indicator to me was, hold my temples and help me with the compression that I have in my temples, my parietals, because you've just released my sacrum. Whereupon he just went into a deep meditative state, and the mummy took the photograph again, and he had a sleeping issue, and this helped with that as well. How's everybody doing?
It's all fascinating.
Yeah,
you're getting close to the end of the hour. Are you going to have a question and answer for our people? Because I'm sure they'll want to ask you a few things.
Okay. Well, what I'll do is just do a couple of more slides. I would like to talk about this one because this is a very useful one. Now, this is a baby who I am. This is their third baby. Very traumatic first birth. The child was on the autistic spectrum, diagnosed by the age of four. During the mummy's second pregnancy, her husband was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease, and a lot of stress and trauma in this family's life. And this child is a third child, and he was born by C-section too. So he didn't get through the birth canal. And when I was working on him, he's not a good sleeper. He was on the mummy's chest, and I was working on his sacrum and his occiput, whereupon he went into what's called a rebirthing movement. And the rebirthing movement was him putting his head back in extension and wanting to go back. And she would have described to me, she says, he always wants to throw himself back, see? So I said, well, and I explained what he was doing. So he was going into a rebirthing movement. So then I explained to her that just let him lie like train tracks in between your legs like this. He will then kick his legs against mum's tum. So that's that last movement, the stepping movement that they need to do to get out of the birth canal. And he will want to find the point of her knees, which will replicate her pubic rami. So he went into that movement, and then I made contact with him. So like I'm the birth canal, so I've got my hand on his frontals and the other hand underneath his occiput. So I'm creating a birth canal that he would be able to go through at his pace, his way, and the way he wants to do it. Whereupon he went into a moment of bliss. He's just relaxed. He's just suddenly stopped. He's gone to sleep. Well, it's not sleep, actually. It's a very deep, relaxed state. And then I've tuned in with mum. I've asked her to breathe in with him. I've asked her to connect with him. Now, the uncle is in the room because he's transporting mum, who's still not able to drive because of her C-section. And the child then goes through these lovely movements, stretching movements. These are baby body language movements. He's going to do these lovely stretching. The uncle has just taken this little part of the video. And he's gone into a deep state. Now, this is very reassuring for a mum because I can help her do that again and again. The baby only has to do it a few times, not lots and lots, because once he's done that piece, he'll want to move on to the next piece. Yeah. And this is such a helpful thing to do with a mum. I'm going to finish off with this one. This is a mum who came to me and she'd booked her new patient, the baby's new patient appointment before she had delivered the baby. So I actually saw the baby at 4 weeks old. Now he's about 6 weeks at this point. She was a chiropractor. And the baby was born with atresia off the stomach. So he needed life-saving surgery on immediately he was born. So he had a gut obstruction. And he was in the ICU for the NICU, the NICU unit for 10 days. The mum has a two-year-old who she was still breastfeeding, which was just fortunate because she was still able to breastfeed the two-year-old whilst this child was recovering. When he first came to me at 4 weeks old, there was no contact with mum, no eye contact. He was listless. The mum was in shock. He was in shock. Now, this is an example, in my opinion, of a baby that I would not take away from mum. I would not take her off her lap. If I'm going to work with him, I'm going to work with him on her lap, or I'm going to train mum how to work with him, because I want to empower this mum to make up for the shock and the separation and the lack of bonding in that sacred hour, in that first day, in that first week. Yeah. So I've just facilitated this move where the mum is, you can see the baby's not lying flat. He's in a slight dip in the mum's lap. So he's about to go into a rebirthing movement, but he's very tired. And he just stops here. The mum has got her hand on his chest. She's regulating his breathing. I'm facilitating, I'm guiding her to regulate her breathing. And he goes into this moment of just letting go. And this is a tipping, for me, in my opinion, in reading the story, it was a tipping point for the mum, where she was then empowered enough to get back in control. This was 6 weeks on. So I saw this baby just last week. He's a year and 2 months. Isn't walking, but crawling very well. So he's had neurodevelopmental delay, understandably so. But I've helped her along the way, understanding his baby body language from this photo. Yeah. So just see. Okay. The other ones are other videos that I have, which I hoped I'd get to, Kate. So I'm going to stop there and invite any questions or comments or feedback. Would be appreciated.
We have quite a few people join us. People are applauding. They want part two in. So, you know, people are wanting more teaching from you. So that's great. All right. So there were a couple of questions. While those of you who are listening want to think about more questions, a couple people and asked about induction rates where you are in Ireland. Like, do you know anything about it?
No, I don't have those stats to hand. I will look them up. But it's changed a lot now. I'm in Northern Ireland, just to confuse you. It's part of the UK. And then we've got Ireland. So there are two jurisdictions. But there's a lot of change afoot. There's definitely a lot of change afoot. But the time that I mentioned there, the induction rate was huge. Yeah. And in Northern Ireland, some parents will go privately to consultants. We have a different system. We have the NH, the National Health Service, in which everything is free as such, but you wouldn't necessarily seeing a consultant. It could be a midwifery-led unit, which is marvelous. But then some mothers feel that if they could attend a consultant, that their baby's needs would be greater. Now, in my opinion, in my practice, the more women who attend consultants, the likelihood that they're going to have a C-section is greater because they're told that it's safer.
Consultant is an obstetrician?
An obstetrician, an obstetrician. They're told that it's safer. And that's a hard one to manage because I need to reframe that. I need to address that because that's not what the research says. And yet I don't want a mum going away with a guilty heart. I need to retrain her about that. And I then talk about, you made the best decision with the information that you had at that time. And that was the outcome that you got. And this is where your baby is. And we can make ground and we can do lots of healing around it. However, your child has missed out on absolutely essential neurodevelopmental steps, and their sequence has been interrupted, and we need to look at that. And then I need a parent to consider that every step in the way around transitions with children, especially around transitions, going to school, going from one class to the next class, going into the classroom. This is where those transitions will affect the child.
And we have Sheila Spernulli here has asked a question. Go ahead, Sheila.
I've noticed umbilical touching, especially when this particular two-year-old gets anxious. There'll be this kind of stuff with his arms, and he'll touch his umbilicus a lot, especially if he's in a competitive mood or overexcited. Might that be an indication of maternal-fetal distress kind of thing?
Could you just demonstrate what you did there? I've just got your photo up now.
Oh, okay. I'm a little bit farther away now. He'll go like this with his arms, and he'll touch his umbilical, his navel a lot.
Okay. This movement with the arms is very much related to the compression of the neck, and they're trying to. Oops, Daisy. And they're trying to discharge the energy from here, and they're trying to stretch. So that tells me that. Now, touching the umbilical is where a child wants to go back to that place where they were inside their mum, and that's how their mum paced them. So if they touch their umbilical, they will have what's called umbilical effect. They will have a relationship with their cord. They'll actually squeeze it and touch it and let the good things in and squeeze it. And if mummy's in bad form, we'll just keep that out. But this, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for the question.
Susan Highsmith, go ahead.
Hi. I want to say thank you very much. I can tell I'm vibrating. I'm keeping my feet flat on the floor, so I'm grounded. This is profound, and it's so much more than I understood as you began your talk in terms of understanding what the baby is saying to us and how it is related to birth trauma or even stuff that went on in utero. I'm very, very interested in the statistics that you have. I was Googling, and I probably found a half a dozen different articles on what's going on in England, Wales, Ireland, and the very, very high rates of particularly suicide among young teenage boys. And you have said very emphatically and very credibly that this is tied to inductions being done. However, none of the studies that I was Googling, not one of them tied it to that. They're looking at early childhood trauma, and they're, you know, there's a 98-page paper on that, but none of them are talking about relating this to inductions. Could you please provide a little more information about that and perhaps a link or studies that we can go to? Because I have an opportunity to use this kind of information to precipitate change.
Certainly, and I just can't, maybe Kate can help me out here. One of the modules one of the earlier modules, there was a reference in it, but I will get you that reference. Yeah.
Which module? Which one?
I can't remember. I'm sorry, Kate, I can't remember, but I'll look it up for you and I will send it to Kate.
Fantastic, you're doing superb work. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My goodness.
Eugenia, go ahead, ask your question. All right, well, I'll read your question. The question is, when you mentioned that twins negotiate, is this an inference, or do we have prenatal behavior evidence-based research?
Well, yes, there is. There are studies done on twins, for example. You've seen children, babies with a net curtain, for example, and the twins will play either side of the net curtain. And this is them simulating how they interacted in utero.
Yeah, there's quite a bit written about twins. I think it's Eugenia, right? How to say your name, sorry. There's whole books on it. Ponatelli is the Italian woman who's written about twin dynamics. And in our journal at APA, there's a lot written about twins and twin dynamics. And so there certainly is evidence of twins. So please please do some searching, because there's some great information out there. Piantelli, that's right, thank you. Piantelli, thank you, Karen Melton. So Sheila wants to know if you do online therapy, Anne.
Not as yet, Sheila, but thank you very much. You know, this is very encouraging, getting the feedback that I'm getting from you, because Kate has been my lifeline, because I feel very isolated over here, because I'm the only one doing this sort of work here in certainly Northern Ireland and the greater part of Ireland. And it would be, you know, sometimes you feel a lone voice, you just feel, well, maybe it's not worth listening to, maybe it's not worth being heard telling the story. So it's very encouraging, but it's Kate that has helped me get to this point. So thank you. This is my first presentation online.
Yeah, and you also teach with a baby body worker, Sharon Vallone, who's from our country here.
Yeah, I did a workshop over in Connecticut in January with her. Yeah.
And I just want people listening to know that there is a movement afoot to do much more training about baby body work. I get requests all the time from people who want to learn or want to know if there's someone in their area that knows. So trainings are coming as well as a comprehensive educational platform around baby's experience. So yeah, that will be coming more into play. So thank you, Anne, very much for your presentation.
Thank you very much, everybody, for listening.
Yeah. And APA, our program administrator, says this world needs your expertise. So we'll have to have you back and be a part of this world, making things better for moms and babies. We're over time, but we're happy to have one more question if anyone has a burning desire. We will have this presentation up and it's recording. And I already actually have uploaded the handout in series 4, which is where we're putting our Join the Conversations, and also in free content on the Teachable website. Next week, I think that our person who was presenting had a family issue and could not present next week. I think our Karen and I are discussing what to do, so stay tuned for Monday Live next week. And then in September, we'll start a whole new series with our new director, Nina Ketcher. She'll be taking my spot here, guiding and directing the department. So stay tuned. Another whole fresh series, Monday Live series, is to come. Okay, everybody. See you next time. Mm-hmm.